This is London calling North America. The BBC presents now a special half-hour edition of Radio Newsreel, including BBC recordings made inside the notorious German concentration camp at Belsen. Stand by for this special newsreel. This is London calling North America. We bring you now a document prepared and presented by Patrick Gordon Walker of the BBC's European service on the German concentration camp at Belsen. Patrick Gordon Walker was, before the war, a student at Oxford University. A short time ago, as a BBC war correspondent, he visited the concentration camp at Belsen and made recordings there with some of the British soldiers who liberated the camp and with some of the prisoners whom they liberated. The first series of recordings, which you will hear now, contains the evidence of British soldiers and was first broadcast in Radio Newsreel North American edition on May the 3rd. Listen now to Patrick Gordon Walker.
I reached Belsen concentration camp a few days after its liberation by British soldiers.
I met these soldiers. They were filled with righteous anger. Unlike British soldiers as a rule, they wanted to talk, to tell the world what they had seen. I made recordings of these men, all of them of the Oxfordshire Yeomanry, just outside the camp itself. I asked them to describe things they had seen and heard in this camp. First, a gunner.
I am Gunner Hockrick, the Oxfordshire Yeomanry. My home here is in Upton Park, London. I am a Jew, and I went to this camp on the first day it was taken by our people. And even though we have been in this camp 5 or 6 days, the people yet, they do not realize that they are free. They do not realize it. And if you could have only have seen one day when I was there, I had a crowd around me of 200 or 300 of them, all Jews like myself, just plain simple Jews. And I was talking to them, and I tried to impress upon them they were free, and I couldn't do it. I just wouldn't take it in. And then I turned around and I said to them, well, who's going to come with me and sing Hatikva? 2 girls came out and they said they were singing with me. And we started singing Hatikva and we sang our Brian Island. And it went to their hearts and it brought the tears I was hoping to fetch. No, if I could only make them cry, I'd make them realize a change is coming to their lives.
Now here is an eyewitness account by another British soldier of what he himself saw in Belsen camp. His is, I think, one of the most eloquent stories I have ever heard told.
I am driver mechanic Payne of the Oxfordshire Yeomanry. I live at Mansfield Woodhouse. I will tell you a tale, just one tale, out of the many hundreds of horrible sights and atrocities that I saw. I myself was guarding the milk store, and round this milk store was a screaming crowd of women with babies. I kept picking a few babies out and feeding them, and one woman who was, I think she was mad, kept kissing my feet and hands and clothing. So I took the baby from her, and I looked at the baby, his face was black, it had been dead for a few days. I couldn't convince her it was dead, so I burst the milk tin open and poured milk down to its dead lips. The woman crooned and gibbered with delight. I gave her the baby back and she staggered up and lay in the sun, and when I next looked, she was dead with a baby in her arms. So I put her with a stack of other dead bodies, 200 or 300 dead, and I turned away. That's all I have to say, but I'm a British soldier and it's not propaganda, it's the truth.
Then I collected a group of some other men of this regiment around the microphone and recorded a sort of round-table talk with them.
I was one of the first British troops to enter the camp. And one of the worst sights I ever seen was, as I entered into the concentration area where the prisoners were kept, I seen a young fellow of about 17 years old holding onto a gatepost with one arm and sagging to the floor. So I walked across to him and I see blood coming from his waist. So I pulled back his shirt, which is torn, and there I found a stab which had been done either by a bayonet or some sort of a sword. And that fellow, I walked up 100 yards and I came back He was dead. There was no sort of first aid rendered to anybody. He just died.
I was making my way over to what was the cook house. The woman was carried around there in mud and filth, and one woman grabbed hold of my knees. She says, "Oh, at last, you British Tommies are here." And with that, she died.
Anyone else like to say something?
I spoke to two Czech girls who spoke perfect English. They'd only been in the camp a week. They were not able to pray on the Sunday and said that they wouldn't have above 3 weeks to live under such horrible conditions. I pray that the Tommies may ever lead them. And we did, right to the day.
There were some pigs in the camp, and I went up to see what they was doing. They had a pig, and they killed it, and they ripped it from limb to limb, and they took his inside out and started eating it. It was a terrible sight, and I shall never forget the day.
You have heard what these comrades of mine have been talking about. There's only one thing I'm afraid of, and you'll be the same opinion that I used to be before I came here, and that is, take it with a pinch of salt.
But believe me, I know that.
And so should you. Every man, woman, and child
in the world should know about this
and believe it. It's the truth.
Well, what you've heard needs no word of addition from me. The men you heard are British soldiers. As you can imagine, these British soldiers worked like Trojans in this camp. Engineers worked without stopping to get fresh water into the camp. And by the second day, there was water everywhere. In hoses with many outlet points, in reservoirs, in water carts. The RASC did a grand job getting food in.
United Kingdom and Canadian military units in the neighborhood gave up 50,000 blankets and gave up their mafia rations of cigarettes and sweets. One British soldier I shall never forget. I found him in the typhus block. Sick and dying people were lying crowded together in rags, many on the floor. The stench brought me to a standstill at the door. There sat this British private, hour after hour, cheering up the sick, though they couldn't understand a word he was saying, and ceaselessly ladling out fresh milk. Already our ambulances had begun to carry typhus cases out of the camp. But the scale of the job was appalling. British soldiers have certainly won for themselves friends in Belsen. I came across innumerable acts and signs of gratitude. Perhaps the most touching was the playing of God Save the King in our honor on the rickety and out-of-tune piano in the SS canteen which the liberated prisoners had taken over. Listen. Is Fania Perla, a French woman whose mother was English. Liberated prisoners of all nationalities stood to attention while she played. The discs you have heard are only one part of the record that has been made of the German concentration camps. The whole world has seen photographs and films of these horrors. There is no longer the slightest room for doubt about the things that were done at places like Belsen and Buchenwald. The world has been horrified into belief. That is the first step, but only the first step. Already people are beginning to ask questions. Questions that we must answer. What is the meaning of these things? What are we to do about them? These questions are not easy to answer. I have seen at first hand the horrors you have heard and seen at second hand. Ever since I saw them, my head has been full of them. And all the time, I've been puzzling over the questions the world is now asking itself. One thing I am sure of. The world is up against something new here. Against evil in a new form. What I have seen is not just cruelty and oppression of opponents, such as the world has known before in its history. No, these things were done by men who had their cruelty and sadism under control, who did these things knowing exactly what they were doing. They were, I am convinced, deliberately and calculatingly attacking the foundations of our civilization. They were deliberately flouting the respect we have for individual human lives. They were deliberately flouting the distinction we make between human and animal. The men who set up and ran these camps delighted in arbitrary killing. They forced people in a planned way to live like animals. They made experiments on women and twins and deformed people as if they were guinea pigs. This manifestation of evil is particularly dangerous because it arose in the heart of civilized Europe and because it commanded power over men's minds and men's actions such as we have never known before. These things are very near us. That's one of our strongest feelings. What are we to do? First, we must revenge these things. We must, in a great act of world justice, punish and trample upon this evil. We must harden our hearts to mercy. We all feel that. But there is something else. We must not wreak indiscriminate vengeance. I say that after having seen the worst horrors with my own eyes, because I have seen them with my own eyes. If our vengeance is indiscriminate, we will be perpetuating the evil started by the SS and the Gestapo. They wish, in their lives and after their lives, to destroy respect for human life. We must restore that respect. We have been brought down to the very foundations of primitive decency. One of these, I am convinced, is that there should be order, formality, and proven guilt before any human life is taken away. Many lives must be taken away. Let us not flinch before that task. But let us beware how we do it. That, to my mind, is one of the lessons of Belzen.
You have just heard the first series of recordings made and presented by Patrick Gordon Walker of the BBC's European Service. Listen now to the second series, which has not been broadcast before. In this sequence, you will hear the voices of people who were imprisoned in the Belzen concentration camp. The sequence begins with part of a Jewish religious service and will also be narrated by Patrick Gordon Walker.
Listening to part of the first Jewish service held in Belzen concentration camp after its liberation by British soldiers. Rather less than half the surviving population in the camp was Jewish. The service was held by the Jewish chaplain to the British Second Army. It was held in the open air amidst corpses and filth.
There were perhaps 200 or 300 worshippers gathered together, all of them in tears.
These people knew they were being recorded. They wanted the world to hear their voice. They made a tremendous effort that quite exhausted them. One of the things the people of Belzen wanted, even more than food and medical care, was to let their remaining relatives in the world know they were alive. I recorded many messages, and I brought back many letters with me for addresses all over the world. One Czech girl, Helen Kulka, spoke such good English, and I asked her to give me a recorded interview telling something of her experiences.
Now, when did you come to this camp here at Belzen?
He arrived a fortnight ago because the Germans began to concentrate all the prisoners from all parts of the country in this camp here, just to leave us at our own device. We were sent to this camp where there was no food for us. We got half a liter of watery soup a day. We hadn't any bread seen for ages. And there were no possibilities to...
Say the word in German. What is it?
There was no room for us, I mean to say. And we had to sleep four people on one berth, if we had such a berth at all, or we were just forced to lie on the ground. The sanitary conditions are impossible. And it absolutely meant death for us. We were all of us lying on the berth, had no more strength left to go out, and just waiting for a bus to come.
How many people were dying a day, would you say, in the camp at that time? I have no idea. It looked...
But the dead bodies were lying around everywhere, and you just had to step over them, and they couldn't be taken away anymore.
Did the Germans not take the dead bodies away at all?
No, they didn't.
Now, tell me a little bit about the moment of liberation when the British soldiers finally got here.
I'm still quite thrilled and can't describe what it meant the first time I saw the first British subject I could speak to, and the feeling now I'm really rescued after all. We arrived and we heard the wireless message, and only when I heard it, it dawned on me that rescue has come and that I will go on living after all.
Since I left Belsen, I have had hardly anything in my waking thoughts but memories of what I saw there. When we reached the camp, there were 35,000 corpses on the ground. In the first days of liberation, thousands more died, many of them from sheer joy at liberation. We were burying them in mass graves. One I saw was not quite so large as a tennis court and 20 foot deep. It was half full. For the first two or three days, the burials, even on this scale, could not catch up with the deaths. It was hard to tell between the living and the dead. People lay down and died before your eyes. A skeleton amidst the skeletons would suddenly begin to move and crawl away. It was against this background that I met and talked with people who were still sane. People of practically every European country, including Germans, who were determined to recapture the lives that we had given back to them. Listen to this woman playing the violin in the SS canteen, which the liberated prisoners had taken over. Her name is Lilian Matte. When I played the disc back to her afterwards, she burst into tears. I used to be able to play, she said. I used to play before big audiences. I have lost my heart. She admitted some of the things she had done. How she had selected women at Auschwitz to be gassed and burned. How she had beaten women. She showed no remorse or regret, though she was very overwrought by the position she was in, under strong guard to protect her against the fury of the prisoners. And she had been made to help bury the dead. I got her to describe Belsen camp as she had seen it with her own eyes. She speaks in a low and tense voice. But listen carefully. It is the voice of a murderess.
So to come and come in a crank up. Then it's the first time that in the same side, the way from the hospital, my hand coming down. Of going the outer
room, she is describing in flat tones the mass deaths in Belsen from starvation, typhus, and neglect. I returned with a sense of immense relief from this woman and the other SS guards I spoke to, back to the fresh and honest world of those who had been tortured and degraded by these guards. Here is one interview I recorded with a Czech woman named Gita Cartagena. She told me she had been in 7 concentration camps in 3 years. The worst of them, she said, was Auschwitz.
In Auschwitz, millions of our people were killed by gas. They had different methods, but gas was the easiest one. When we came there, 5,000 of our people had been there for 6 months, and the exact date when the 6 months were fulfilled, they went to the gas. 4,000 had were at this time, and there were about 1,500 babies under 6 years, and young people, old people. So less than one night, they were exterminated.
How long were you at Auschwitz?
I was there exactly 6 months. From the day this 4,000 people left, we knew the date of our death. We knew we had to live 3 months more. I myself, I was making marks on my bedstead how many days I had to live still. And every night I went to sleep, I undercut one mark, and so it was one day gone, and one day less to live.
How many days were there left when you left Auschwitz?
The first month we hoped, excuse me, the first month I hoped there would be a miracle. The second month we thought, why? All the people before us went to gas. Why we not? It's our fate. You can't change anything like that. And then when you are young, I'm 21, you want so terribly to live, and you never know what value life has got when you know that you lose the exact date.
Gita Cartagena went on to tell me how 2 days before she was due to be killed, a new decree was made by which those capable of work were to be taken to the heavily bombed towns. She herself was taken to Hamburg. Under this decree, mothers with children had to choose between their own lives and their children. Children were not allowed to accompany their mothers. To be left behind or to stay behind meant certain death. By gas, if they were lucky, otherwise by burning alive. Little children of 6 got to know that their mothers might leave them to be killed. Terrible scenes occurred. Gita Cartagena told me of one young mother of 24 who, after a tremendous nervous crisis, decided to leave the camp and leave her child behind. She lined up for her medical examination. Let Gita Cartagena finish the story in her own words.
And this little girl of 6 years came to her and said, listen, I think you're going to leave me here. I don't allow that. And now she had a nervous breakdown and wanted and returned. But the 2 days we stayed there more, this little child hasn't spoken to the mother anymore. She was entered.
When did you come to this camp here at Belsen?
8 days before your soldiers came. But it was high time to rescue us, I assure you.
Some children have survived. I met children in Belsen. Children whose mothers and fathers had been taken away and killed. And who had been looked after by self-appointed foster mothers with unbelievable self-sacrifice and tenderness in the midst of starvation. I asked some of these children to sing for me. They sang songs they remembered from before their captivity. Standing there amidst pine and young birch trees, as far away as we could get from the corpses, about 50 or 100 yards. Here are some Russian girls, their ages 9 to 14. Here to end with some Dutch boys and girls of the same age. A song in honor of their British liberators. the English, long may they live in glory. By the time you're hearing this, these children have been moved and are beginning a new life in which they will know some happiness. The camp they have left, when it has been finally cleared, will be burned and blotted from the face of the earth.
You have been listening to a series of recordings made in the concentration camp at Belsen in Germany, presented for Radio Newsreel by Patrick Gordon Walker of the BBC's European Service. This is the British Broadcasting Corporation. This is the British Broadcasting Corporation. The next program on this frequency, 15.31 megacycles per second, is a 15-minute news broadcast in Spanish for listeners in Mexico and Central America.